ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ May Brahman bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. So the Bhakti Yoga of Swami Vivekananda, to summarize what we had discussed in our last class, that before we proceed on the path of devotion, we must have a correct understanding or concept about God. Why is it so necessary? We discussed because, first, our concept of God depends upon our state of consciousness, what we are, and that alone determines our concept of God. If we are body bound, then God has form, God has name, and God has qualities. If our state of consciousness is slightly higher, accordingly and progressively, our concept of God also grows. Swami Vivekananda used to say, God grows along with man. Really, God doesn't grow, but our idea of God grows. So this is the first point we had discussed. I will enter into more details a little bit later. Why we should have a right concept of God? Because our concept of God has a tremendous influence upon our behavior. For example, if a person has a concept of God who is cruel, who doesn't know what is called mercy or compassion, or who is partial, what happens? The person also becomes cruel and very partial, fanatical. For example, a fanatic believes that nobody enters into paradise excepting himself. And in that community to which he belongs, only the men enter into the paradise. The women, even if enter into paradise, they do enter into paradise, because man cannot live. Only women enter there into the paradise to serve the man. This is the idea some people have about God, about the paradise. Just as our nature also influences our concept of God, so also our concept of God in its turn influences our character. Suppose a person imagines God is very loving, very kind, very compassionate. What happens? Our very nature also will change even if we do not have those qualities. It is because as we go on thinking of God, what do we think of God? His qualities. Even his body also has influence upon our bodies. Not 15 minutes indifferent type of meditation, but really if we go on focusing, then our very body will change. See, Sri Ramakrishna used to meditate on Hanuman. Has not his body changed? He meditated on Radha. Hasn't his body changed? Saint Francis meditated upon the body of Christ. And he actually, there was crucifixion, the what is called blood coming out of his palms, etc. Quite a number of mystics have been found to have these things. So, not to speak of the body, our very mind will be transformed because we become what we think deeply, intensely, and most of the time. That is why it is said, you let me know what you think and I will tell you what you are. In other ways also, if you tell me who your friends are, I will tell you who you are. Because we do choose our friends, our food, our dress, all depends upon our thoughts. And our thoughts depend upon what we think is the most worthy thing in life, what is the most important thing in life. If we think this world is very important, our whole nature will change. So this is why we must have a right understanding or concept about God. Most of us, we spend time in japa, prayer, meditation and other spiritual practices. But we don't find very often much progress in our lives. What is the reason for that? Are we doing something wrong? What has gone wrong with us? Why is there not so much expected transformation? It is because we are not thinking of God in the proper way. Swami Brahmananda used to advise his disciples and devotees that before entering into meditation, sit quietly. Let the body and mind become calm, peaceful, quiet. Why is this advice given? Because this very concept that we become very quiet, also our understanding about God becomes changed. Suppose we are very restless. What would be our concept of God? A restless God. When we are angry, our God also becomes angry. And as I gave the example, you know these robbers, highway robbers in India called dacoits. They used to worship Mother Kali. Why they have chosen, of all there are 33 million gods and goddesses, why had they chosen only Mother Kali's form or concept rather? That's because that excellently suits their purpose. And so, thinking about her also influences their behavior. They don't feel remorse in killing other people because that is their idea of God or Goddess. So Swami Brahmananda used to say, first be very peaceful, sit quietly, mind becomes quiet, then you should imagine that your Ishta is looking at you with the greatest pleasure, with this beautiful smile on his face. That is why Hindu gods and goddesses always depicted as smiling, very pleased with us. Now we know that we are not worthy of their pleasure, really speaking. Of course, deep inside, we do have that idea that we are the most worthy recipients of God's grace. My neighbor may not, but I am certainly most worthy. But I tell people, no, I am a great sinner. I am not worthy of the grace of God, etc., etc. So when we look upon God as though he is pleased with us, that also affects our character. As usually, we judge ourselves and more than ourselves, other people, with our human outlook, human understanding. If somebody has committed something wrong, then we are apt to criticize that person, look down upon that person with the greatest harshness. And we think God also does exactly the same thing. How do you know that God does these things? In fact, he never does it. That's, if you want to know how God looks upon us, then you have to see how Holy Mother used to look upon devotees. Do you think every devotee was such an advanced soul that they were all pure and sinless and all that? Most of them were not wicked people, I won't say wicked, but ordinary human beings with ordinary human failings, worldly type of people. And yet she never rejected anybody unless they were one or two exceptions, great sinners. And that too she rejected not because she is not having mercy upon them. She did not allow them to come near because it affects her own body. Now her body is meant for the good of lot of people. But if she allows them to touch her, then her life may be endangered. That is the simple reason why she did not allow. Sri Ramakrishna also used to say to worldly people, please go away or sprinkle Ganges water where they used to sit. He was not looking down upon them. They cannot look down upon anyone. But he was doing because their contact would reduce, diminish their effectiveness to some extent. And that is, they did not want to waste their energy, their power. Even an incarnation has a limited power. Compared with us, it look as though they have unlimited power. But compared from their point of view, even an ocean can dry up if the water is wasted. So they want to do the greatest good. Anyway, so we must have correct concept of God if we have to progress in spiritual life. One of the greatest obstacles in spiritual life, do you know what it is? Called frustration. There is a story, the old devil wanted to take retirement. So it was selling all its tools at a throwaway price. So a lot of, you know, aspiring young devils flocked to have this. See, sale means we all rush. So they all went there. And every tool was so costly, were old, rusty, used for a long time. But every tool was, you know, £1,000, £2,000. But still they are very much usable. Then they found out that in a glass case, there was a very crumpled, rusty, oldest type of small tool. £100,000. So the young devils became, what is this? All those other good tools you are selling only at £1,000, £2,000, but this stupid old instrument, £100,000. The old devil explained, you see, when all the other tools fail, this is one tool with which I could corrupt human beings. Oh, what is the name of this tool? It is called frustration. 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, go on doing japa, prayer, meditation. Nothing much seems to be happening. Then we give up in frustration. Why do we do that? What does frustration mean? It means there is no chance of progressing in spiritual life. God is never going to answer my prayers. God is highly displeased with me. How do you know that God is displeased with you? Do you think God will ever be displeased with you? He is doing all he can so that you will gradually progress towards him. But we do not know that. He knows that. But if we have a correct understanding of God, God is very loving. He is taking care of me. He will never abandon me. Even if I abandon God, he would never abandon me. If we have that understanding of God, there would be no case for frustration. Sri Ramakrishna used to illustrate this with a most marvelous parable. You know, there were two yogis sitting under trees and praying. One person became a yogi or a spiritual aspirant only recently, just a few years back. And the other person has been praying for so many years. In his childhood he has been praying. So Narada was one day passing through that way, and these two aspirants met him, saw him. Where are you going, Narada? I'm going to Lord. Okay, we have a question. Could you kindly take it to the Lord and bring back the answer? Surely. So Narada went. After some time he returned and he met the first yogi, who has been practicing only for a few years. So the yogi asked Did you ask the Lord? Yes. What was his answer? His answer was, just you have to do another 1 or 2 years more, then he will give you his vision. The question was, when is the Lord going to show himself to us? So after 1 or 2 years, this man started weeping. Oh, what is this? I have already spent so many years and still 1 or 2 years more I have to do. He started weeping. Narada said, I'm sorry, this is what the Lord told me, and went on to the second man. The second man has been practicing ever since his childhood. So Narada was asked, did you bring back the answer? He said, yes. What was the answer? He said, look at the tree under which you are sitting. It happened to be a tamarind tree, very huge tree with the smallest type of leaves, millions and millions of leaves. He said, look, as many leaves there are on this tree, so many times you will have to be reborn before you have the vision of the Lord. The man jumped up with joy and started dancing. Oh God, how merciful he is. So soon am I going to see him. And as soon as he said that, immediately the Lord appeared and said, I am very pleased with you. Here I am. This is the parable Sri Ramakrishna had said. Now, what is the concept of these two people about God? The first person who just started his spiritual life, it is a very painful duty to be somehow done. He must have been a very frustrated soul in the world. He didn't get anything. So he became a spiritual aspirant, and he has been calling upon the Lord as a painful duty. So when Narada said that you have to still pray for another 1 or 2 years, he became all the more frustrated. Whereas for the other person, calling on the Lord is the greatest joy. He is not doing it out of a sense of painful duty. He is doing it because he loves to call upon the Lord. Whether the Lord comes or not, that is a different matter. He is not bothered about it. His thinking about God is quite satisfying for him. It is only a most loving person can do it. So his concept of God is so merciful. Now how many of us really think that God is really merciful? Just imagine, I have come across so many devotees, and they are apparently very sincere, very good in every respect. But there is a problem with their concept of God. So as long as things are going on well, the good Lord is really good. He deserves the title good. But as soon as, you know, things start going wrong, not because they attribute everything, why is Sri Ramakrishna doing this to us? Why is Thakur so putting us to all this misery, as though Thakur has no other business excepting to attend to your private affairs. It is the nature of this world. You see, every living creature, it will grow up, it will have sometimes health, sometimes disease, sometimes happiness, sometimes unhappiness. There is never unchanging happiness or unhappiness in this world. Change is a most natural thing in this world. But devotees expect a special, you know, agreement with the Lord. Chosenness, you must look after us. You know what it means really? If God gives you happiness, that is the greatest curse, any greatest harm anybody can do to us. Do we understand that? Suppose God gives you a most loving family, children, plenty of money. What would be your condition? You will be in this world, in this so-called samsara, forever and ever and ever. It is only when the blows come, right and left, front and back, mostly from the back side, then you are pushed forward. You see, there was a Calcutta, Howrah Bridge. People were passing. Suddenly, you see, a child slipped from the bridge and fell into the river. And everybody is very sympathetic, looking with the greatest sorrow. The child is about to drown, and nobody is going forward to help the child. Suddenly, there was this American reporter with his camera and all that. He was seen jumping into the river and going to the child, rescuing him, and somehow brought him to the shore. And naturally, the reporters were all agog. So they ran after him and then praised him. Next day, this all was there, his photograph, his news and everything. And some of them said, "Oh, you are a god on earth, you have saved. What is it that, what can we do for you to please you as a reward?" He said, "I would like to find that fellow who pushed me." When miseries, suffering comes, really it is a great blessing. And God also is a very wise person. Do not think that he will just push you without any discrimination. If at all he gives suffering to devotees, that would be the right type of suffering, which he knows the devotee can put up and it will be good for the devotee. In our gives any kind of pain or misery, so that will drown the child but never helps the child. So it is very important for us that we sit and first of all think what type of concept I have about God. If our idea of God is as a happy, kind, merciful God, it will transform us, because we become as we think. And thinking of God is the most important spiritual concept. Now we come about what does the Vedanta has to say, what type of concept it has about God. One important point that we had already discussed in detail is that we do not really know about God. All that we know is our own understanding of God. So we must always bear in mind, these are all just thoughts, concepts. Our mind thinks this must be God. So there are three ideas according to Vedanta or Hinduism. This idea of God in Vedanta is based upon Vedic revelation, supplemented by its elucidation contained in the Puranas, the Tantras, and the writings of the great philosopher teachers of the Acharyas like Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva. And even to understand these concepts that are exposed in these scriptures, one needs an authentic interpreter. Often, incarnations of God act as interpreters of our concepts of God. One of the greatest contributions Sri Ramakrishna has given to us is that we should never limit our concept of God. He used to simply say, never have limited ideas about God. This is a most marvelous, significant statement. What does it mean? It means God is so infinite, one can have infinite number of ideas, and yet there is space for infinite more number of ideas about God. How is it possible that can you have more than infinite number of ideas? That is a concept. Infinity is not a number, it is a concept. Suppose if you add 1 to infinity, what would be the result? Only infinity. Suppose you take away 1 from infinity, what happens? It is exactly same. This idea is expressed in some of the Upanishads. Purnamadaha purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnam eva avasishyate. That transcendental reality is infinite. This reality, which this world which we see in front of us, is also infinite. This world which is infinite, has come out of that transcendental infinity. Even though it has come out of that infinity remains infinite only. It never diminishes, it never becomes more than anything else. So these are the three concepts Sri Ramakrishna very often used to tell through small examples. After saying, do not have any limitations about the idea of God, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, quote very often Hanuman. Hanuman or Anjaneya is considered to be Jnaninam Agraganya. He is the foremost of the knowers of God. So Hanuman was asked, what is your concept of God? And what he gave in reply to this question summarizes what we are about to discuss. And what did he say? Says, Deha Buddhya Tu Dasoham Jeeva Buddhya Tvadam Shakaha Atma Buddhya Tvame Vaham Iti Me Nishchita Matihi. When I consider myself as a body, then you are the Lord and I am your humble servant. When I consider myself as an individual soul, you are the whole and I am the part. And when I consider myself as the supreme reality, there is absolutely no difference between you and me. We are the same. And what a marvelous idea is expressed in this. This is what exactly we are going to discuss. Now the Vedas, the foundational, the canonical scriptures of Hinduism, have expressed all these three ideas about God. Is it that there are three types of God? Why are those, there are three concepts about God? As I said, you know, it is not that God is three, but it is according to the state of consciousness we are in. So what is the highest concept of consciousness about God, concept about God? He is beyond the body and mind. So as an example of this kind of description, there is the famous Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. There is a passage here. This self has been described as not this, not this. He means the highest reality is incomprehensible because he is never comprehended. He is indestructible, for he cannot be destroyed. He is unattached, for he doesn't attach himself. He is unfettered. He doesn't suffer. He is not injured. This is a passage with profound meaning. I will not go into the details, but what it really means is that something cannot be expressed through mind and speech. Why can't it be expressed through mind and speech? You see, whatever experience we have, however highest the experience, there is an important psychological principle here, that when we are experiencing something, we become one with that. That is the meaning of experience. When we are experiencing something, we cannot say that we are here and we are experiencing something. Only when we come down from that state of experience, then we find words, that was good. So we actually dwell with memory, play with memory of that experience. Never actually while experiencing, because at that time we transcend time, space and causation. Let us always keep this definition in mind. An experience is something which transcends time, space and causation. Even as simple as an act, suppose you are eating a sweetmeat. You are hungry, you are not having diabetics, I assume, and you got a very good sweet, and you have put the sweet on the tongue. At the time the sweet touches the tongue, there is a split millisecond when you have the experience of becoming one with that sweet. But immediately afterwards, your mind comes down. And then you say, though you use the present tense, that I had this very tasty sweet, I ate very tasty sweet. Actually, every experience means complete union. You know why? You see, suppose the sweet is not really good. What do? Spit it out. But as soon as it is so good, that what happens? It becomes one with you. Sometimes you become too sweet also, you know. So, nothing can be really expressed. It is the anything that can be expressed always remains separate. The highest reality is beyond all expression. Why is it beyond all this expression? First reason I gave you is that every experience is beyond all description. But when we describe that experience, even worldly experience afterwards, we have to come down, as it were, become dualistic, become separated from it, and then use concepts, words, etc. to describe that experience. Now, regarding our worldly experience, we use words, shabda, to indicate an object. To indicate correctly, so that others can understand what we mean, we have to use the correct words. And to be able to experience ourselves, the correct understanding of what is meant by these particular words, there are five conditions to be fulfilled. What are those five conditions? The first condition to be fulfilled is that the object should be present. It must be available for direct perception. You are seeing me, I am seeing you, you are hearing me, etc. You see, there is no need for somebody else to tell you. This is a direct perception. Suppose I am sitting here and say, oh, so and so devotee is entering through the door. All of you can turn your faces and experience what I am experiencing, or see what I am seeing, right? Suppose I tell you, there comes Brahman, and you all turn your heads towards that. What do you see? Don't think I am seeing it. I am only saying it. What do you see? You don't see anything, because Brahman is not directly perceptible. By the words directly perceptible, what I mean is, through this, to these five sense organs, and even to the mind. It is not an object of this body or mind, sense organs or mind. And therefore, to make any meaning of our words, is one of the conditions that must be fulfilled is, it must be present, and it must be perceivable or experienceable by everybody. Otherwise, Sri Ramakrishna says, I see the Divine Mother. But what about the others who are sitting in front of him? So if there is somebody who is mad or who is hallucinating, there is a ghost here. He is seeing the ghost, it may not be denied. But are others seeing it? No. Therefore, this is the first condition. For an object or for a word to make meaning, to be meaningful, this is the first condition. It must be experienceable, perceptible directly by everybody. The second condition that also helps us is, the object must belong to some species. For example, suppose you are sitting in your room and somebody shouts at you, there is a tree behind you, behind your house. You are not seeing the tree. But immediately after hearing these words, there comes a picture of the tree into your mind. You know exactly what the other person is talking about. How do you know? Because you have seen a tree many times before. And the tree is not a solitary thing. The tree belongs to a species. See, supposing there is an apple tree. You have never seen an apple tree. But you have seen a mango tree. That also will serve the purpose, because this apple tree is also another kind of tree like the mango tree. Tree is a species. A human being is a species. A cat is a species. A cow is a species. So the object must belong to some species called jati. First is pratyaksha, second is jati. The third way of making words meaningful is the object, even if you are not seeing it, must have a quality. It must have something to be distinguishable from the other things. Supposing you are sitting in a room with some friends and one of them tells you, I would like to have one blue rose. Now there are so many roses there. If he simply says, I want that particular rose, and you will not be able to make any meaning out of it. There are so many roses. Which rose do you exactly mean? So one of the ways is, I want a blue rose. Among all the roses, there must be only one rose which has the quality called blueness. Then immediately you know what this person is talking about. You go and bring that rose, isn't it? Or you can say, if there is a sweet, I want a yellow colored sweet. And you know the other sweets are white or bluish or whatever it is. But you know exactly what the person wants. Quality. Or you bring that red horse. There are so many horses, but one horse with completely distinguishable red color. This is called guna. Or bring the most fragrant flower. Some quality which is special to that particular object, which can be clearly distinguished from all other objects, that is called quality. By quality also words become meaningful to us. Or otherwise you go to a railway station, I want, give me a ticket. Is it not a foolish type of request? You have to specify where you want to go. Then only the ticket will be given. Of course, if you park illegally anywhere, you get a ticket even without any asking for it. This is the third. It's called guna. The fourth way words can be meaningful to us is, they must be connected with some type of activity. Suppose, you know, one car is obstructing there. And we want that car to be removed so that some other car can get out of that place. And we don't know to whom that car belongs. So what do we say? The driver who is driving such and such a car, he please come out. You know, immediately the driver, we don't know the person, but we know him by the activity. He is a driver. Or if the food has gone bad, call the cook. We don't know the person, but by his activity we know. Or sometimes when celebrations are going on here, gujur gujur, you know, sounds are coming from behind. So the people who are making noise, please shut your mouths. So you see, by activities, we also know. There was in Bengali family, there were lots of children, and the family has got a small shrine room. The mother used to keep some fruits in the shrine room, and she kept some bananas there, and after some time she went and checked them. One was missing. So she shouted, who has taken the banana? All the children kept quiet. One fellow lifted, I have not taken the banana. The mother understands that is the fellow who has taken the banana. So by activity, we can also make words meaningful. The last is this kriya. This is called kriya, fourth one. The last is that sambandha, relationship, father, mother, etc., etc. Call your father. I don't know your father, but you know because you have a relationship with the father. Or you can say this officer. Who does this office work? Let him come. Another way, suppose there is a book on the table. Please bring that book which is on the table. There are many books all round, but only that particular book which is on the table. or I want that particular table. So I say, bring that table on which there is a book. Do not bring any other table, only that particular table I want. This is called relationship. These are the five ways by which words become meaningful to us. But the ultimate reality, God, as it is not pratyaksha, it doesn't have any qualities because it is called nirguna. It is no jati or species because that is one of its kind. There are also certain things in this world which are of only one of its kind. Do you know that? Supposing I gave the example. Now there is a tree behind your room. And immediately, even though you are not seeing the tree, you understand because you have seen many trees before. Suppose you have never seen sun, S-U-N, sun, before in your life. For the first time you are sitting in a dark room and then somebody shouts. So there is a sun behind you, look at it. Can the person have any idea about the sun? That is because the sun doesn't belong to any species. It is only one. That is why you cannot single it out as a species. Species means there must be many. So God is not having, God doesn't have any qualities. He is called nirguna. God doesn't have any activities. He is called nishkriya, without any activity, inactive. And God also doesn't have any relationship. That is why he is called nissanga, completely detached. This is the idea being expressed here. So what is the way to give a concept about that God? It is to give a negative idea that there is no way. Neti, neti. Not this. Is it like this? No. Is it like this? No. Sri Ramakrishna gives this beautifully. A girl was married and the husband came, and her companions who had never seen her husband were all sitting. This girl was also sitting and they were all asking. Mind you, this is an Indian girl 100 years back. Nowadays, if you ask where is your husband, she will go and catch hold of his ears and say, this is... So they were asking, is that your husband? No. Is that your husband? No. She is going on saying no, no, no. But ultimately only one fellow. Is that your husband? First of all, there is no need because there is only one fellow. But just to make sure that he is the husband, she doesn't say anything. What does she do? She smiles and puts her head down. That indicates to the others that that is the husband of the girl. But what Sri Ramakrishna is telling through these very common analogies is this profound truth that God cannot be indicated. There are other ways of indicating about God. It is not saying anything about God, but it is an indication. This indication in Sanskrit is called nyaya. Nyaya means an analogy. One nyaya is Arundhati nyaya. When newly married couple, the priest has to show an example, exemplary husband and wife. Do you know who they are? Vasishtha and Arundhati. So nowadays many marriages are taking in the daytime and the priest has no time to wait until night time. So he says it is a custom. It is written in the book. You must show after the marriage an ideal for this. So he will take them to a tree, to outside the house, and says, do you see that tree? Yes. And do you see that branch? Yes. And in between the branch, do you see those so many stars? Yes. And in that star, there is one small star. Yes, I see it. It is called Arundhati. And you see another star beside it. That is Arundhati Vasishtha. So this is called Arundhati Nyaya, the analogy of showing the star called Arundhati. In daytime, what stars do you see? It is just a custom to show. So when Vedanta says neti neti, through negative usage of words, it is not this. It means it must be something else. There are certain ways that human beings have found out by sometimes saying something else, sometimes by saying negative things, sometimes by not by saying something completely different. Certain meanings are very clearly indicated. Let me give you two examples of this. Suppose there are on a table, there are so many tumblers, and each tumbler is filled with water excepting one tumbler which is empty. So somebody tells you, bring that empty tumbler. Mind, words are very tricky. Bring the empty tumbler. Now, can you bring empty? Do you know what emptiness is? Have you ever seen emptiness? Bring the blue glass. Bring the glass with water. You can say that, bring the tumbler which has only half a glass of water. You can understand it. Bring the empty tumbler. But you understand because you don't know what is emptiness, but you know what is full. So you see, every glass is filled with water, excepting one tumbler, and you know that there is no water. Not having any water is called emptiness. It is not a positive quality at all. It is purely a negative idea. So you bring that, you understand what the man means. This is indicating something through the usage of the words, not this, not this. Another clever way of indicating some idea is, I'll give two examples, interesting examples, is by talking completely different things. What is that? Supposing a mother has two children and she brings both the children to me and the mother introduces the children to me. Swamiji, my youngest son is very intelligent. She is not saying anything about the eldest son at all. She is not talking anything about the eldest son. What does it mean? It means he is not that intelligent. He is not telling anything about the eldest son. And yet, by these words, that the mother has clearly indicated that the eldest son is not that intelligent. This is one way that we also use in all other these things. In our day-to-day life, we use it. Even gods or goddesses also use this word. Do you know that? You know, yesterday we had Jagadhatri Puja. So Holy Mother's place in Jeherambati, Jagadhatri was invoked. They themselves invited themselves and came. That's a different story. But after worshipping for many years, Holy Mother had, Holy Mother had decided that it is a hassle to worship Mother every year. So she wanted to put a stop. That night, the goddess Jagadhatri appeared in the dreams of Holy Mother. Do you know what she was telling to Holy Mother? That person's mother has it in mind that to worship me, shall I go there? What is she telling? What she is telling is that if you don't want to worship me, don't think that I have no place. I have the other place to go. So it is now for you to choose. A clearest indication that what she wants really is, I want to be worshipped by you. But she is not telling directly, I would like to be worshipped by you. She is telling the mother of such and such a person is thinking of worshipping me. Even gods and goddesses also take to this recourse, to this clever ways of, you know, conveying their ideas. So this is another example. And in our scriptures, these examples have been very clearly used. The first language used in this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is Neti Neti, not this, not this. Is it this, this, this? No, not this. But lest it should give us an idea, not this means perhaps such a thing doesn't exist at all. That's not the meaning. By negative language they are saying, because whatever idea you have about this world is completely inadequate to understand what we are indicating to you. It is much, much, much bigger, picture much different from whatever you have experienced. That is the only idea. So this is the one of the examples from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, and there is another Upanishad called Mandukya Upanishad. It is one of the smallest Upanishads, having only 12 mantras, and it is one of the toughest of the Upanishads. But in brief, this Upanishad is talking about three states of consciousness: the waking, the dreaming, and the deep sleep state, Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti. So the Mandukya is telling Brahman, it is not that which is conscious of the outer world, nor that which is conscious of the inner world, nor that which is conscious of both, nor that which is a mass of consciousness. It is not simple consciousness, nor unconsciousness. It is unseen, indescribable, ungraspable, without any mark, unthinkable and immutable. It is the essence of unitary self-awareness. It is that into which the world is resolved. It is the peaceful, the benign, the non-dual. These statements, though negative in form, make it sufficiently clear that what is meant is not a nihil, but a transcendent entity which tears the webs of subject-object, cause-effect and time-space relationships. This is the meaning of duality. We live in a world of duality. Means, if one thing is present, the other thing is also present. If there is time, there is space. If there is space, there is causality. If there is subject, there is an object. If there is an object, there is a subject. So if there is an effect, there is a cause. If there is a cause, there is an effect. We cannot escape. This is the net of Maya. But these statements mean that the reality is something which is far beyond. So Sri Ramakrishna is to be asked, is God with form? Yes, he is with form. Is he without form? Yes, he is without form. Is he? And then he used to say something very paradoxical. God is both beyond form and formlessness. What does he mean? Is it not illogical to say God is with form? We can understand. God is without form? We can understand. But what is there beyond both form and formlessness? Is there something? All that he means is, where there is a form, there is an idea of formlessness. Where there is formlessness idea, there is an idea of form. So what is called a relative absolute idea? When we say it, this is absolute, it is not absolute, absolute. Forgive my, expression of language. It is a relative absolute. That is to say, something which is opposite of relativity. When we say it is absolute, we really mean that it is the opposite of relativity. We cannot think of this absolute, because there is this relativity is there. When you are thinking of that absolute, this relativity is absent. But it is there in the background. But what Sri Ramakrishna meant is absolute, absolute means you don't think about it, much less speak about it, you can only experience about it. This is the first concept Vedanta is again and again and again insisting upon us. And I will also discuss why it is so very important to have this concept. And if this concept is lacking in the background, then what would be the consequences in our day-to-day practical life? So the second concept uses positive epithets describing him as a suprapersonal, transcendent and immanent entity. The second concept of God is that it is still without form, but there are certain concepts, very positive concepts. What is the most positive concept we have of this second type? Do you know? God is called as creator, sustainer and destroyer. Because why this concept has come? If there is something, there must be some cause for it. If you suddenly see a pot, then you should imagine there is somebody who is the maker of the pot, because the pot cannot make itself. In Vedanta, they use this, what is called instrumental cause and intelligent cause. Nimit upadana karana. Upadana means material cause. A pot comes out of clay. Clay is the material cause of the pot. But the clay by itself cannot form something. There was an atheist 100 years back, and there was a bishop, but both of them were very good friends, but always used to attack each other. The man who doesn't believe in God says, this is all religion, scripture, this is all bunk, this is all created by priests. But they were good friends otherwise. It is possible they may have different opinions, but they can still be friends. You know that Bishop Berkeley. So once this was Aldous Huxley's father who was opposed to that. So this Huxley, Mr. Huxley, once entered into the bishop's office and found at that time somebody presented him a beautiful table clock. So this Huxley was very much impressed by it and said, "Oh, Bishop, you have a wonderful clock. How did it come?" He actually meant who gave it to you. But, you know, the bishop took that as an opportunity to poke him and said, "No, no, it just, nobody had given it to me. It just made itself." So, this world cannot come out of itself. There must have been somebody who has done it. This is what nowadays is called intelligent design theory. If there is a creation, there must be some creator about it. So, this Brahman or Ishvara, he is the Nimitta Karana or intelligent agency, a conscious entity like a potter, and who takes advantage of the material and shapes various things out of it. This is the first idea we have. So the second idea we have is, he must be having infinite auspicious qualities. Asesha Kalyana Gunasagara. We want only infinite auspicious qualities. What about the inauspicious qualities? According to other religions, that God is only good, He is merciful, He is compassionate. Who told you that? God also is very unmerciful, very uncompassionate. He just as creates, He also destroys. He also brings about natural disasters. This is the idea Vedanta gives us, that God, all any quality that comes, that we experience, is all coming out of God. So if you see a wicked person, who is the root cause of that wickedness? God. It must be God. Because if we don't accept, then we have to question and say, who is the author of this wicked quality? A Satan, a Satan, we have to create separately. And then this God and say a Satan will go on eternally fighting with each other. There are wonderful ideas. It's not my idea to go into those things, but this is the second concept about God, that He is the creator. He is an ocean of infinite auspicious qualities. This is the second highest concept about God. Even that concept we are not capable of understanding. Then there is a lowest concept of God, which is God is with forms, not only with form, but with infinite number of forms. God is with infinite number of names. God is with infinite number of qualities. Now, even if we understand this third and lowest concept of God correctly, there would not be so much of conflict between religion and religion, nation and nation, etc. This we will discuss in our next class, probably in the month of December, I think. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.